Hey, hello, Rich. How's everything out there in Bangor?
It is beautiful. It's a gorgeous Chamber of Commerce kind of fall day today.
Did I tell you that I was, I think I may have told Carrie this, but I was watching like House Hunters, and there was Bangor, and there was the square and where we got coffee,
Oh,
and
wow.
the whole place was there. And I knew it was a setup. I knew it was rigged. And the way I knew it was rigged is that the people driving in their cars were completely dressed. This was one thing that really shocked me about Bangor, Maine. There were so many people driving in their pajamas. Of course, we were up in the morning at some of those times, but driving in their pajamas and their night coats. And I thought that there is a great deal of comfort and confidence to a people that can drive not completely dressed. Because you know you're going to make it to your destination, or you know if you don't, there's going to be somebody there that's going to take you into their home, set you up with a bed and a nice cup of coffee. It was one of the highlights of, boy, it was one of the highlights of that whole year was coming to Bangor.
I'm glad you view it as comfort and confidence and not simply just giving up.
No, it was comfort and confidence for sure.
Excellent.
For
We're
sure.
glad to hear that. I want to also get an update if we can. How is construction going at Shea Tobolowsky?
Oh gosh. Oh man. I always think that the genetic descendant of Don Juan is the contractor, because these people are born to disappoint women. It's like every promise. Every promise that's made is broken, but not only broken, but broken in a way that is so vile. It began last December. December, like we're in September now, right?
Right.
So it's almost a calendar year. It began last December when my wife Ann noticed that there was some water inside of our home. And the contractor said, "Well, it's the balcony off of your bedroom. We have this little balcony you could hardly even stand on that was somehow leaking. The flashing or flushing, whatever it is, was not properly done, and it was leaking into the house." So they pulled the entire balcony off of our house. So now we have a gigantic hole in the second story front of our house into our bedroom that they covered with a thick sheet of plastic.
Oh, good.
That sheet of plastic was on our home for about 8 months. 8 months to where
Wow.
Ann and I, we'd be taking a shower. You come out, there's that sheet of plastic, and you have to negotiate getting from the shower to some cover as rapidly as possible. Now, after that happened, they discovered that there were termites and dry rot in the roof, so they pulled the roof off. And then they started pulling off every window of the house that the flashing or flushing was incorrectly put on. So we had holes all over our home, and all sorts of critters were coming into our house. So we've been, now we have the hole in the balcony's been fixed. We have our driveway's been torn up, so now our cars can't go into our garage. And it's a tale of woe when you live here. We are like people in Maine in the morning, because at 6 in the morning we have to get up and move our cars off our property so the workers can get here. And Ann and I do wear our pajamas when we get into our car and move those cars, but it's not out of comfort.
Oh no.
But they told us that it would be finished, the house would be finished at least by the end of October. So that would almost be a calendar year.
Well, you sent me a little video, and
Oh.
it looked like the set of the sequel to The Hurt Locker.
I mean, rubble,
Yeah, oh
rubble. We're
yes.
talking,
Yeah.
yeah, it's like Aleppo. It's like Syria. Our home looked like it was transplanted from the streets of Aleppo. It was tragic, and our cats have adjusted. So now they're just sleeping by the big holes in the wall now, and they seem to have calmed down a bit. Our rabbit has adjusted. So we're all adjusted. The only one who really hasn't adjusted is Anne. And she said she wants to do all of the talking to our contractor to put the fear of God in him, because she could do that like nobody else. She's my superhero in this case.
And I'm a little concerned. You said that your squirrel friend has been has been scarce ever since this project got going, huh?
Yeah. The squirrel, Violetta the squirrel. We have not seen Violetta, but this morning I did see a baby squirrel come running along the wall where Violetta did. And I'm thinking, is it possible she was on the nest and this is one of her children? And the little baby came running up to where we put nuts for Violetta. And then about 20 feet from our home, the baby ducked into a bush. And what came out of a bush was a large tree rat who continued the journey toward our home. And so I don't know. We put a limit on what do you call transitional pets, animals that aren't really pets right. but come up and eat from you. We don't let the rats do that. We don't feed the rats. So, but everything else we feed the turtle, we feed the towhee, the California towhees, the birds. We feed them all, except for the rats.
We have to draw a line somewhere.
You have to draw a line somewhere.
We're talking with Stephen Tobolowsky here on Downtown. Well, let's talk about the work because, my goodness, it's coming fast and furious for you lately, shooting the Goldbergs, the Goldberg spinoff school. You got a lot going on.
A lot going on. And you know, it wasn't long ago, Rich, that we had nothing going on. This is one of the important things about being an actor that people have to always accommodate is that your last job could be the last job you ever had. And Anne and I went to Finland. On a vacation, she went to work, and I went to celebrate, I think, my 67th or 8th birthday, one of those two. And so I was just working on my stories, and Anne was working with a playwright over there. And I had to come back to a meeting in Austin, Texas. And there is a flight that goes from Helsinki to Austin, Texas, if you could believe it.
Wow.
And there was a meeting about one day at a time, which Netflix did not pick up. And so after three glorious seasons, we were canceled. And I met there in Austin with our executive producer, Mike Royce, and Brett Miller, our other executive producer. Norman wasn't there. Justina Makata was there. Todd Grinnell was there, and myself. And Mike confided with us and said, the show isn't dead yet. He says, I've worked on dead shows, and there's life out there. There are three different networks that are interested in One Day at a Time now because their big comedies got canceled. And of all things, CBS Pop, God love them, that's the station that's been doing Schitt's Creek, which was a very big hit for them. And they love One Day at a Time, and they picked us up. And the... It was kind of a lovely moment in that we were at dinner and Mike says, it's not dead, but everybody's probably going to have to give up something to make this happen. And everybody did. You hear all sorts of stories in show business about people who are always, in a way, putting themselves first and not the project. You put the project first a lot of times in theater, but not in television. But everybody loved One Day at a Time so much, all the actors. We all gave up things. We all gave up parts of our salary, whatever our salary was or were. Norman Lear gave up his fees and his money on the show, gave it up completely. Our executive producers gave up their money. Everybody gave up something to make another season of One Day at a Time possible. And out of, you know, Rich, I've been on good shows and I've been on bad shows, but this warmed my heart that everybody felt so strongly involved with One Day at a Time that we were all willing to make a sacrifice. And here's where it comes back around to the Goldbergs and Schooled. So everybody had to make a sacrifice. I made a financial one to do that. And a lot of the people involved over at Sony, the studio gave up a lot of their money. The studio gave up the money. So they wanted to lend in a hand, as did my agents and managers. They said, we want to try to make up what you lost in keeping One Day at a time on the air. So we're going to rustle up some Goldbergs and Goulds for you, which is at Sony, which shoots right next door to One Day at a Time. And they did. And so I went from having the end of my life in Helsinki. I'm just going to drink beer and eat. You know, they have salmon in Helsinki. So if you like salmon, you would have died and gone to heaven. If you want a choice on the menu other than salmon, you may have to look long and hard. So I was eating salmon and drinking beer, finished with my acting career, ready just to die on the vine. And now I'm involved with three shows in a row. I just finished yesterday. I did another Goldberg's. I've done Schooled, another Goldberg's the week before. Everybody's trying to load up on everything before One Day at a Time starts again in January. So it was a really, really wonderful showbiz story from my point of view.
Well, it sure is. And it's such a terrific series. We love it. The critics love it. And people, so many people fought to get this show back. It has to feel awfully good when you get somebody like Lin-Manuel Miranda taking up the cause of your show.
Yeah, Lin was fabulous, and he was tweeting out about it. Come on, guys, you got to pick this show up. It was wonderful. He is the sweetest guy. He is such a wonderful guy. He's come by the show some, and we went at the show where they honored him. We went and were there to support him for that. And such a wonderful guy, great family. There are a few nice stories in show business that percolate around. Here's a diversion, a divergent story that we don't usually talk about. And it's something that was probably like one of the biggest things that's happened to me in my life. Probably it'll be a subject of a podcast at some point when I digest it. But our eldest son, Robert, 30 years old, moved out of the house. He wasn't one of these kids, you know, eating potato chips in the basement. He was a professor of organic chemistry at UCLA, and he ended up getting a tenured gig at Pierce College here in Los Angeles, teaching organic chemistry, being one of the big wheels in their organic chemistry department. He moved out of the house 2 weeks ago. And Ann and I became official empty nesters.
Oh, boy. How is that going?
Yeah. It's been the subject of comedy on television. But I got to say, I felt so empty and so sad. And my wife felt so empty and sad, too. At the same time, my father, who's 96 or 97, he just had a birthday, and my brother gives me regular reports on how Dad is declining rapidly. He can't remember anything. He can't remember the end of the sentence at the beginning of the sentence. For some reason, I was feeling really low that day, and I thought I would call up Dad. And I called him up, got him at the nursing home where he's staying, and he says, "Well, how are you doing?" And I said, "Well, Dad, here's the real story. Annie and I are so sad because we're alone in the house now. We don't have the kids there anymore. Even though they're not kids, they're grown up." And you realize at a certain point that the purpose of parenthood is so they will go. So they will go and live a successful life. That's all you want, is for them to find some sort of success. So I called my dad up. And I told him this, and my father, who couldn't remember the beginning of a sentence, said, "Stephen, I want to tell you, when you left the home, it was one of the hardest things that your mother and I had to go through. We did everything we could, but not having the laughter in the house and not having you kids playing in the house really tore us apart, and it was hard on us. And so we worked as hard as we could, but Stephen, let me tell you, it was nothing work. It was work just to fill the emptiness, and it was empty. And we traveled, and that was empty too. So all I can tell you is, it's something to deal with. It's a part of growing up. just like any part of growing up is. It's a period of adjustment. I don't know if your mother and I were ever successful. You may not be successful, but just know it's something we all go through.
Wow.
And I could not believe it. It was one of the most in-depth, personal, emotionally there, completely cognitive conversations I ever had with my father. It was so important to me and so moving that that was one of the biggest things that's happened to me in the past few weeks since we talked last. And I don't think I'll ever forget that conversation with Daddy-O.
Wow, that is wonderful. Well, you know, I came to parenthood late in life, and so I'm experiencing the first stage of that. I dropped my little guy off at kindergarten day one last week, and it was a lot tougher on me than it was on him. He was doing great, and then he got in that line that they put them in to go inside with their teacher, and he just cast a look over his left shoulder, a moment of uncertainty, and I said, I need to get to my car very quickly.
Oh.
So moving out for good, I'm a basket case just thinking about it.
Yeah, they don't warn you of that stuff. And when you watch sitcoms on television, those aren't usually the subjects they go to, are the things that people really have to deal with. Hey, it's something one day at a time would deal with.
Yes, indeed. It's
one of the topics that one day at a time would, the untouchable topics. And it's probably one of the reasons why I love this show so much, because there's something absolutely unique and untouchable about that show and the topics that it picks to discuss. But anyway, that's been my big news, is trying to deal with kids. Leaving.
You mentioned your trip to Finland. You had some wonderful photos, some beautiful pictures. But I seem to recall some challenges when you were in the pantry in the home you were staying at.
Yeah, it was impossible. The Finnish language is like someone takes a Scrabble, the letters from Scrabble, and just throws them up in the air. And then you have some 12-letter word there with more vowels than you've ever seen, or all consonants, one or the other, with umlaut. You know, they have iPhones over there, and you know how you type messages on an iPhone?
Mm.
I couldn't even read the letters they had on the iPhone, because they have more than 26 letters in their alphabet, and they have a lot of umlauts and a lot of letters crossed through with things that you can't read anything. You could have a word that's like, you know, 30 letters long with all sorts of umlauts and everything on it that means enter, something like that. I got hit up by gypsies there. I got hit up by gypsies, two gypsy girls. And apparently this is the big scam over there. It is the most, Finland is the most undiverse country you could ever possibly go to. Everybody is not only tall and blonde and white, but they're tall and blonde and white. There's just nobody else there, but they do have a couple of gypsies there that come from across the border, and they start doing the panhandling thing, asking for spare change or whatever. So I pulled out a euro to give to these two gypsy girls who came up to me, and she says, you could keep your money. What we really need is food. Will you take me to the grocery store and buy me food? And one of the old lessons I learned in my Jewish studies is that when somebody asks you for something specifically, if you can do it, try to do it. So I said, okay, what store do we go to? And she pointed to a grocery store. We went in there. And I have never seen, it was like she was on Guy's Grocery Games. I've never seen anybody work a grocery store as fast as she did. Within five, she got a ham, she got some steaks, she got 48 eggs, wow. She got heads of cheese. She, she loaded up her cart with food, and then her sister came running up with a bag of potato chips. And I said, no. I had to draw the line somewhere. Rich, we all have to. I said, no potato chips. You don't need the potato chips. She got milk. She got all of flour to make bread. And we ended up, it ended up costing something like 45 euros of food money that I bought. I bought these gypsy girls their food. And then she said, are you coming back tomorrow? Because we're going to need this. This will take care of. I go, no, I'm never coming back here again. I'm never coming to the street again. I did have one miracle in Helsinki, in that the man who does my eye, ear, nose and throat, that doctor, he has a new little kid. And he said what he likes is snow globes.
Oh, yes.
And he wants, if in Helsinki, I could bring him back a snow globe. Well, I'm in this city, and I can't read anything anywhere. I can't read the names of streets. I can't find my way on a map. I don't know anywhere. And I'm walking around the downtown area, and I'm walking into a store to try to find out where is the street where my little Airbnb is, because I have no idea where I'm lost. And I walk into the place, and it's the snow globe store, the one snow globe store in all of Scandinavia. And I ended up buying a snow globe there in Helsinki. That was wonderful. It was an amazing place to go, and I would love to go back again. I loved it, and Anne now is directing a lot, and she knows these Finnish writers. And hopefully, you know, it would be nice to go over there and have Anne direct a play over in Helsinki. And I just would continue my drinking beer and trying to avoid the gypsies at all costs.
And eat the salmon. Certainly, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you, you did a wonderful, looked like a wonderful event thing with David Chen doing the Tobolowsky Files live. That looked like a fabulous gathering.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. It was kind of like the first year they did it, and I can imagine that people would, that this event could continue to grow. It was a combination of rock music events and theatrical events. And if you play rock, paper, scissors with a theater event and a rock and roll event in a venue next door, the rock and roll event will always win. You know, once those guitars start tuning up, if you're there telling a story or something, forget it. So I'm looking at the schedule with David Chen. I'm looking over, I'm thinking like, okay, we're coming on. We have, they had scheduled us for something like 50 minutes, but I could see that it was 43 minutes between when the next rock group was supposed to come on. And I figured those guitarists were going to probably want to tune up beforehand. So on the fly, David and I cut our performance down by 7 minutes to where I was able to finish the last sentences of the story just as the rock band started warming up. It was, first of all, it's always great to do a Tobolowsky Files event live. We had a great time. We had a great time where I read stories there in Maine. That was fabulous. And you meet so many people. And who I met there in line, who came up to me afterwards, was an entire family who came to see the Tobolowsky Files because they were fans of One Day at a Time.
Oh, yeah.
And so you see that everywhere. And you get the One Day at a Time love everywhere. And it was wonderful. And David, it was always phenomenal to see David. And David Chen and I, now this is an exclusive for your audience.
Wonderful.
But David is coming to Los Angeles in December, and we're going to try to make some films of the Tobolowsky Files before I start shooting One Day at a Time. Maybe if we're able to do two or three live in a theater, with an audience of me doing some live Tobolowsky Files shows with an audience. That's our aim. That's what we're going to try to do. And then distribute them on a YouTube channel for like free.
That sounds wonderful.
Just for amusement.
I love the sound of that. Well, it is always great to catch up with you, Stephen. We wish you continued success with all of your TV work, with the construction. And I want you to know that in your honor, I'm going to get up early tomorrow, put on my best pajamas, and drive around Bangor.
Just drive your kid to school.
Oh, yes,
and you'll be like all those other parents in line. I love it.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you so much, Rich, and love to everybody out there.
We'll talk with you soon. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stephen Tobolowsky with us here on Downtown.